Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I began the On Background podcast series to talk to journalists about why they came to do what they do, and whether it's been Molly Ball or Bob Costa or Eric Greenberg, they're all very different. Jake Tapper has agreed to do it with me today. But Jake, this is one of those days we really don't like to go to work. I mean, I did not want to come to work this morning because I knew I would be spending the day 3 hours just sheep dip in the terrorism of yesterday. What's your reaction on a day like today when you have to go and do the lead today this afternoon, get ready for this story?
Well, it's obviously on a human level, it's sad and tragic to hear about this. The attack took place between 3 and 4 yesterday, so right before my show. So we were just getting details about it. That's always very challenging because, you know, you want to share the information you have, but also, you know, a lot of the information that comes at the beginning of such an event, even from law enforcement authorities and government authorities, is not necessarily accurate. That part's challenging. I have to say, I mean, I hate these stories just because they're so sad. But by the same token, as a journalist, I mean, one of the things that motivates me is whenever there's one of these horrific events is trying to piece together, were there any failures? Is there a law? Is there some sort of issue in our law enforcement system that did not act as effectively as it could have? And I think that is one of the important parts of being a journalist, whether it's, you know, trying to find out more about pump stocks from the Vegas shooting, or now President Trump is talking about what he perceives to be flaws in the immigration system, and specifically the diversity visa program. I think that these are times for journalists to probe and ask and try to figure out if there are ways that these events can be prevented.
One of the things that interests me the most, I just finished reading the book Tom R. L. Noori has written called American Radical. He's an FBI agent who is a Muslim who has been undercover with the FBI for more than a decade. He broke up the Canadian train deal. He's broken up a number of jihadi attacks before they occur. And we always see about a paragraph in the newspaper about jihadi attacks that didn't happen. But then when they do get through the net, I think of the people like Tom R. And I also think about American Muslims who are just, honest to God, the best people in the world. And they're going to get blowback today. It just is inevitable they're going to get blowback. I just quoted the USA Today, the fellow who used to be the spokesman for the mosque in Patterson where the terrorists attend, saying he's not even Arabic and we're going to get blamed for this sort of thing. But if we start talking about that in the media, Jake, people will accuse us of being soft on terrorism.
Yeah. I mean, it is a conundrum. But, you know, obviously, look, I mean, there is a particular problem right now when it comes to radical Islamic terrorists. I mean, that's just a fact, and it's unfortunate. This is a constant threat. There are other constant threats of anti-government and racist and white supremacist terrorists as well. But these problems need to be discussed head on. But part of the discussion, I think you're right, Hugh, part of the discussion is why does it happen so seldom in the United States compared to places in Europe? And one of the reasons is because we are this great American melting pot, and Muslim immigrants assimilate very well and come to value the freedoms and ideals we have in this country. And that's a good thing. And to paint it in a broad brush it's just counterfactual. But by the same token, we can't pretend that there isn't an issue right now.
Now, that's why I want people to read American Radical, to find out how we combat this most effectively. Jake, I began in journalism in 1989 as a radio guy and have done television and radio back and forth. And now it just seems to me that the number of horrific stories has accelerated. Political scandal, there's nothing new there. It was there when I've been there. We've had them through the Clinton years, the Nixon years. Even Carter had political scandal. That is a feature. It's a feature, not a bug, in American democracy. But these kinds of stories are new, beginning on 9/11. I mean, we had Columbine before that. Have you noticed over the course of your career, you're just hitting stride, you're going to be doing this for another 25 years, that the acceleration of terrible things is picking up?
Well, it does seem like there are more of them. And statistically, there are more mass shootings. And statistically, there are more of these individual terrorist attacks. Especially in Europe as well, because, you know, as the media has progressed, we have come to see that, you know, events in Europe, we cover them similarly to how we cover events in the United States, especially when it comes to terrorist attacks, because we recognize that if it can happen in one Western democracy, it can happen in another. So I think statistically, they are happening in a more rapid clip. It is it's tough to use the term good news when you're talking about something like a terrorist attack. But the truth of the matter is that our intelligence agencies and our national security apparatus say that one of the good things that you can point to is the fact that a lot of these attacks are not as spectacular, sounds like the wrong word, but giant, enormous, horrific, in terms of, you know, ramming airplanes into a building or blowing up, hundreds of people on a subway. They're not succeeding, the terrorists, in those attacks. They are getting caught, and that's why you see a lot more of these lone wolf type events, because ISIS is losing in a lot of ways. And it's a weird thing to point at an attack and say it's evidence that they're losing, but it is, because they are not succeeding in these grandiose, horrific types of attacks. They have to resort to doing things like using a car as a weapon, using a truck as a weapon. Still awful, still ugly. Law enforcement still and intelligence still needs to do as much as they can to prevent it, but it does show to a degree the degree to which the United States and its allies are succeeding in beating back the terrorists.
Now, on the journalism front, Facebook's general counsel was in front of the Senate yesterday, and I don't know if any single senator has read World Without Mind by Franklin Foer, but it's actually kind of scary that Facebook is now the primary source of news for more than half of the American population. That's crazy, because it's algorithm driven, and you self-select so that if you're a jihadi, you're going to get more jihadi stuff. And if you're a conservative Republican, I don't use Facebook for news, so I can say this. Conservative Republicans are never going to find out that there are Democrats in the world if they just read their Facebook feed. So when you confront that, you are now talking to the journalism students, Jake. That's who usually consumes this podcast. What should they know and not know about how to interact with the web, in your view, as they go forward into a long career in journalism, hopefully?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that's important for, and this isn't just for journalists, but I think for the American people, is Twitter and Facebook can be a great source for diversity of views. And, you know, that means, for instance, that, you know, I'm following you and I'm also following Rachel Maddow. I'm following a lot of people, I'm following Josh Marshall from Talking Points Memo, and I'm following Jonah Goldberg from National Review. And, you know, it is in this diversity of viewpoints that you can try to suss out what you think and why you think it. And it's especially important, I think, not only to have a diet. And this is, again, as a citizen, not just as a journalist, but to have a diet that is representative of the diversity of viewpoints, not just left and right, but also voices within the left, voices within the right. I would never compare, for instance, I would never say that you and Jonah Goldberg are coming from the same place. You're not. You're coming from Hugh and Jonah's place. And same thing on the left. I mean, Josh Marshall is not the same as Nick Kristof. And so, I mean, it's important to have a diversity. And then, you know, I think it's really also important, and this is why Facebook is troubling. And I should disclose that Colin Stretch, the general counsel, was a classmate of mine at Dartmouth.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was surprised to see him when he popped up yesterday. I'm like, I know that guy.
He's too young to have white hair like me. I mean, that was really remarkable. The White Hair Caucus got a new member yesterday.
He's you know, he went white pretty early, I have to say.
So I had 35.
He has a full head, though. That's probably all he cares about. What's distressing is when you see the Facebook on the news feed, you see sites that aren't news sites. They're right. not the New York Times or the Weekly Standard or the Wall Street Journal. I mean, they are invented crazy sites, whether they are, you know, propaganda from other countries or just the most uninformed lying partisans or ideologues on one side or the other. And I see those shared, and I have a pretty diverse friend group. Both my, you know, left-leaning Ivy League friends, but also a bunch of right-leaning friends from the military. And, I see this stuff pop up that it's just like, that's not true. That's not accurate. That's not fair. And you get in a position of saying, wow, I wonder this person is really only consuming half the story. And at that, it's not even accurate.
Oh, it's very difficult to get the story right. I saw two movies this weekend, Thank You for Your Service and Human Flood. The latter is a documentary about the refugee crisis. Both of them are informative. They're way outside of the zone of many people. But what you're suggesting is, I think, true of all media. People have to go where they're not expecting to be comfortable or they're not going to be very good. When did you start in journalism, Jake? When did you get your first gig?
Can I just say one thing about Thank You for Your Service? It's a wonderful book by David Finkel. And I reviewed it for the Los Angeles Times several years ago. And it's very compelling. You should read the book because
it's a very good movie. I'll tell you, it is a very good movie. And I watched it with my son, who walked out and said, that is very hard. You know, when you're in a military family, you don't like to confront stuff like this, but it is very hard to watch, but it is very necessary to watch.
Yeah. I started as a journalist in the mid-90s. I was kind of like unsure of what I wanted to do with my life. I was working in public relations for Jody Powell and Sheila Tate.
Oh. Oh, you're breaking up on us, Jake. Oh, cell phone dropped. Just as we got to Jody Powell and Sheila Tate.
I can still hear you.
Oh, good. Now you're back. Jody Powell and Sheila Tate. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Jody Powell, I worked for Jody Powell and Sheila Tate. They had a PR firm, bipartisan, and I was just kind of, I was a horrible PR executive, and I was just trying to figure out what to do with my life, and I was on a ski trip, and a guy there had written a story with his brother that was in the New Republic, and this is during the heyday of the New Republic in the 90s when it was, they printed all sorts of really fascinating stuff. They had Michael Lewis's essays on the presidential candidates in 96 and Andrew Sullivan and all the rest. Anyway, it was kind of like a light bulb going off saying, oh my God, like actual real people can write stories and submit them freelance. And that's when I started being a freelance reporter. And from there, it went to Washington City Paper and then Salon.com during a much more bipartisan, nonpartisan era of Salon.com as opposed to today. And then ABC News and then CNN.
So it was, I always tell people, I never, ever sought a job in journalism. Journalism jobs right. always found me. You did not have a career path planned out. It just happened.
Yeah, exactly right. I wanted to be a freelance writer, and I was not particularly political, actually, in the stories I wrote in the early part of my career. They were more like about Washington, D.C. life or about entertainment, because I was a pop culture junkie, and the politics part of it kind of came alive when I went to Salon.com. For City Paper, I was doing stories about, you know, things that happened with the police here in D.C., Mike Tyson getting in trouble with the law, a boxer that got shot in a hospital, and just police stories, because those are great, great stories and tragic and full of, you know, the rich human tapestry of life. And then ultimately, you know, the writing I did about politics ended up getting more attention and more people interested in it. But that's not what I was, that's not why I got into the business. I got into the business just to tell interesting stories that I didn't think people were telling.
Now, like John King, who's also got a print background, I think it is very useful to have print in your background or writing ability in order to be able to do stand-up. And you first came to my attention as a White House correspondent. I didn't know about you until then. Do you agree with me that the folks in the television business who have come out of a print business have an advantage? Not necessarily a winning advantage, but a skill set that a lot of purely television people don't have.
This is a huge, yes, 100% I agree with you. And this is a huge generalization. Okay. So anybody that I'm offending by this, I apologize. I'm not talking about you. But a lot of people that I find in TV journalism who started out in either print or radio are people who got involved in journalism to be journalists and then ultimately landed in TV because they thought that was the best way to be a journalist for them. And a lot of people who are in TV journalism who started out in TV journalism, seem more focused about being on TV than they do about the journalism. Again, that's a huge generalization, and I'm sure it's not true and unfair for a lot of people, but I always tell young people when they ask me for advice, join your school paper, or join the school radio station, because that's if you start off in TV, then you run the risk of only trying to learn a minute and a half version or a minute and a half worth of knowledge about any particular story. Whereas if you start off in print, you want to devour everything. You want to know everything. You want to know 5,000 words worth of story. And having more information and also just knowing how to write will help you immeasurably wherever you end up.
Now, let me conclude, Jake, and thanks for all the time you're doing. I want to go back to the debate prep room because CNN, I've told people I'd never had more fun than in debate prep. And CNN threw into that room probably 20 people, all of whom are journalists, all of whom have different roles. I think of Teddy Davis, for example, on your show, but playing Ted Cruz. They all got there by different way. There is no way to get into journalism. But if you're a young journalism student at Columbia or at Medill, or you're down at the Cronkite School or at Syracuse, what is the best way? What should they be doing to end up at the very height of the game, which is to be in that room preparing to do a presidential debate?
Wow, that's a great question, because everybody has different paths and everybody ended up there a different way. I mean, and some of the best people there, by the way, ended up, you know, they start right out of college. They started off as desk assistants.
Yep.
At a TV station, at a TV news station. I just think that you have to go, first of all, when you're young, you just have to go where the opportunities are. And you have to realize that there's going to be years of paying your dues. Very, very seldom is somebody just plucked out of college and put on TV. And when they are, by the way, it often ends up being a disaster.
Yep.
People don't know this, but Peter Jennings, in his late 20s, was made anchor of World News, and it was not successful. And then he went back to reporting, and then years later was made part. He was became part of a three-man anchor team doing the news, and then eventually he became anchor, solo anchor again. So his second run was the successful one, but the first one was a failure. Because the audience didn't buy it for whatever reason. And maybe the audience was wrong, but at the end of the day, they get to decide. So the point is just, you have to pay your dues. You have to learn how it works. You have to get the lessons from the people who have been there before. And maybe you're getting coffee, and then just while you're not getting coffee for people, you're listening and observing. But being there, showing up, being in the room, however you get in the room, that's what you need to do. That's what you need to seize. And whether it's radio or newspaper or TV, please disabuse yourself of the idea that anyone is an overnight success. It takes years, sometimes even decades.
You know, you just provoked in me a question I haven't yet asked in six of these. So I'm going to start asking everyone. There's disappointment in every career, in every profession. And you had your share, I'm sure, of disappointments. How ought people to prepare and respond to those disappointments when they don't get the gig, when they are turned down, or the piece fails flat, or you've worked for... Poor Tim Alberta did this blockbuster on John Boehner. I mean, it's a blockbuster piece. It's devoured by the news cycle. Nobody knows about it. And I talked to him about it earlier today. But that's a disappointment. What do you do, Jake?
Well, first of all, let me just say, I read that Tim Alberta piece. It got a lot of attention. Maybe not as much as it deserved, but it did get attention from a lot of writers and reporters. You know, it was retrospective, so it can always bounce back, I'm sure, because it wasn't tied to the news. But look, there's disappointments in every field, and the point is, like, the next day you have to get it. The news never stops, right? So, you know, one day you have not a great day, or one day you don't get the job you want, but the news never stops. And every person I've ever seen who wants to be a journalist, if they have the drive, ends up getting a job in journalism.
Yep.
I mean, the drive is the important thing.
Yep.
And then, you know, there's no one path to your dream job. You just have to follow the opportunities where they come and work, work, work. I mean, that's what I always tell people, is like, it's really just about working as hard as you can, having something that people will want to hire you for. And it's not, you know, a lot of times it will just be like, you're going to show up, you're going to smile, you're going to do the work, you're going to be there, and you're going to be smart and well-informed and know as much as you can. And if you're willing to do the work, it will work out, I promise.
Jake Tapper on Background. Thank you for your time. Terrific conversation. I appreciate it, Jake. See you soon.
See you.